Time for Poets Corner, one of my favourite segments in the entire week. And I have been so excited to meet you, Brendan O'Shea.
Well, I've been very excited to meet you, Sharon, so it's good to be here.
And you've kind of lived up to your online image. Is this like your, I guess, uniform? I didn't want to say costume.
Uniform, yes. Me and my wife used to run a store selling rainbow clothes once upon a time, and we didn't make a lot of money, but I got a great wardrobe of rainbow T-shirts.
Everything's tie-dyed and colourful. And,
I wanted it because a lot of poetry, people can often perceive it as being a bit down, a bit heavy, and I wanted to have that lightness come through, because to me that's very important about the energy that I bring to it. To me, mindfulness is about something that's uplifting and makes you present and makes you want to be present. So I like the T-shirt because it kind of gives that energy buzz to it.
Can you share a little bit of your history? I'm intrigued. I hear at one stage you were a Buddhist monk.
I was.
What led you to the decision to do that and then to leave that path?
Yeah, well, it's kind of the same thing that got me into poetry, really, because I've had depression and anxiety, and so I've sort of involuntarily been very involved in my mind and what's going on. And when I came across Buddhist meditation, I thought, I have found it. Like, it was an answer to all this craziness that I could never figure out. So I was a monk for 6 years, and it worked. Like, it really did give me more awareness and more presence in my life. But it didn't work in the way I thought it would, because I thought I'd just get more and more peaceful.
And you just sort of zen yourself off into a...
I'd be just one of those insufferable people who just smiles all the time and nothing ever bothers them. But what happened was my awareness increased of my thoughts, but then it started to go deeper and I started to develop emotional awareness. And I found I was sitting on this volcano of just anger.
Ooh.
And I had no idea it was there. And it was after years of meditation that I had the tools that I could actually face it. I could actually start to experience it. But it was overwhelming. And sadly, I came to the decision I had to leave being a monk. And so other people I know have successfully managed to do it. But I just had so much stuff going on. And I just felt I couldn't explore this in the boundaries of a celibate monk. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know what I needed to do. And so for that end, I had to give myself open slather to go and, you know, find out what it was. But those years as a monk gave me a lot of really good training. And then the mindfulness journey carried on from that point. The next thing I did was I trained as a yoga teacher. And that was like a mindfulness of the body. And that was huge, because coming into the body, I've read somewhere that emotional awareness is basically body awareness. And that rings so true for me, because as I did more yoga and started to feel into the body, I started to get a better understanding of things like emotions. And I was listening to your program just before when Andrew Roberts was on. And she said, she was talking very much about, in terms of mental health, one of the big things is acknowledging feelings and not squashing them. And I can say absolutely, like, one of the huge steps forwards I've had through yoga and then through studying counselling and then finally through meeting my now wife has been that thing about express yourself. And for someone who is, like, from childhood has just, you know, just been taught, no, you don't express anything, everything's fine, and if anyone asks how you are, you're fine all the time. That's it. Yeah. To break out of that and to start expressing myself, it was a huge journey, but it has helped me. And I'd say that and one of the reasons behind Mindfulness Poet too is I feel, as someone who's gone through that journey, I've got something that I can share with people out there, people who are depressed and anxious, and also people who live with people with depression and anxiety. Because
now that is a really good point, and we'll probably, you know, need to get you back on to cover everything I'd love
Absolutely.
To cover on that subject. But when someone's dealing with something, we as a society very much and appropriately to a large degree focus on the person who's dealing with that, the person who's, you know, perhaps depressed and or the person who's got a certain condition or who's facing end of life. And that becomes the focus. But in fact, that changes the landscape for everybody who loves that person and who's connected to that person. And dare I say, you know, has a ripple on effect to the whole community.
Absolutely. And one of the things about depression, one of the cruelest things about it is when someone is in the middle of a depressive episode, communication is so hard. It is so hard to talk about feelings because a lot of the time it's either numb or it's painful. And so for that person, a simple conversation just to tell someone, look, it's okay, I'm just going through this episode, I'll be all right, is almost impossible. Like, my wife had to kind of train me over the course of about 2 years so I could actually communicate to her when I was in a time when I just wanted to be quiet and alone. And it's little things like that. And yeah, telling people who don't have the extremes of depression that I've had, what it's like, is a way for them to think, oh, right, so when he does this, you know, that's what's going on. He's not retreating from me, he's retreating from everything. Like, he's not, it's not just that he doesn't want to talk to me, he doesn't talk to anybody. And that's because of what's going on inside him.
Yeah, and we do take things personally, don't we? As many times as we hear, now, don't take it personally. Doesn't matter what it is. If someone says it, you can't unhear something.
Yep.
How do you use the, and I will give you a chance to to give us some poetry shortly, and maybe I'll just signal Dan in the producer's booth when we get to the poetry. Can we Facebook Live this? Would you mind, Brendan?
Oh, no.
Yeah,
course,
okay,
yeah.
So we'll Facebook Live that part of the conversation. And now I've lost track of what I was going to say. What were we talking about? We were talking, for the person who, not taking things personally, and you can't unhear something. So it might be, you know, something that you heard in the workplace or the schoolyard, and it plays on your mind in the middle of the night and you can't sleep and it goes round and round and round. How can mindfulness, or can mindfulness help?
Well, mindfulness can help. It's one of those things about if you find yourself lying awake at night. I've written a poem about this. It's called Prayer for the Overwhelmed at 3 a.m. And it's the first thing to do is to acknowledge what's going on. And so often we reach for a story. I can't sleep because of what she said. I can't sleep because of what he did. But that's not really what's keeping me awake. It's that relentless thought going around that I keep paying attention to. And I'm paying attention to the thought because there's another part of me I don't want to pay attention to. And that's the pain that's underneath all that. So it can be quite a challenging journey. But until we go to that feeling in the body, until I actually sit with that anger or with that misery or just that helplessness, that feeling of being overwhelmed, then we can start to move on.
Are we looking for a cure in that moment, or are we simply looking to acknowledge and understand ourselves and, I guess, learn to live with the good, bad and the ugly?
Acknowledging what's there is huge, and that's something very big I got from my Buddhist training, because the essential part of us is already peaceful. It's the disturbances of the mind that we've picked up as bad habits, which is what actually destroys our inner peace. And if we stay within those thoughts, and particularly within the stories that arise from them, like, you know, I'm not good enough, I was just born this way, I'm never going to be happy, why bother, all that sort of stuff, it just becomes a huge self-perpetuating loop. But by acknowledging that this is a feeling, that's the beginning of saying, okay, it's a feeling, but that doesn't have to become this story. It doesn't have to become this story of me being helpless and hopeless, and then that doesn't have to become my life. So working back from that is about sitting with the stories. Yeah, this is what I've always thought. This is this old movie that I always play in my mind again. And now we get to that feeling. And a lot of meditation for me now is sitting with uncomfortable feelings.
Doesn't sound like a lot of fun.
It's awful, but
but it must be somehow rewarding, relieving, enriching.
It's, well, for me, I'm a bit of a person who likes to do things quickly. And it's actually the quickest way to deal with depression. Rather than dragging this thing around for a couple of days and muttering to myself and
weeks,
trying to avoid
months,
it.
Years.
Yes,
yeah.
Decades. It's about, okay, I've got this feeling. Something triggered me, and it might have been a person or an event, but I've got this feeling is in me now. But it's just a feeling. And if I can, and the beautiful thing about mindfulness is that by training, you can get to a point where you'll see it. You'll see the feeling coming, and you'll see the story rising to meet it. And you can just step out of the way. And then you're just witnessing an old story around a familiar feeling.
What are you going to recite for us this afternoon?
Well, I wanted to share with you something about the benefits of mindfulness. Because not only is mindfulness good for coming out of depression and things like that, once you're in it, life is good. Like, life's better. It's more enjoyable. So an example of this I give is it's just a little story and then a very short poem. One of the mindfulness exercises I do these days is I rub my wife's feet with moisturizer. It's something I've done since we've been gone out.
Husband, take note.
Yep.
Hope he's listening.
And when I'm just rubbing the feet and putting the moisturizer on, it's just being in the hands and just that sensation of feeling. And also doing something for someone you care about. That's a great feeling. So being with that feeling as I rub the feet. But there was one day when I noticed that I wasn't enjoying it as much as I usually do. And when I sort of felt into that, I realized I was preoccupied with something that was going to happen that afternoon. And as a result, I wasn't fully present where I was, like touching my wife's feet with moisturizer. So I thought to myself, well, mindfulness pilot, that's not very mindful. And I just made that decision. Feel your fingers. Feel the moisturizer. Come into that. And when thoughts come, just let them go. Just be here for a minute with your wife's feet. And it worked. I started to come back into that space and it was good again. And I could feel the inner peace sort of coming. Because when the calluses on my hands connect with the calluses on her feet, there's a special kind of love that comes when imperfections meet. Knuckles, toes and tendons, ligaments, bones and skin, that's the language of the body, and love moves therein. Through these eager, earnest fingers that touch each and every part, and through caressing your bumps and bruises, I gently touch your heart. And just as my eyes delight in your face, so my hands delight in your feet, precious and tender, where our imperfections meet. May the pleasure of rubbing your tootsies always bring me gratitude for you and your gentle patience of me and my roller coaster moods. So when the calluses on my hands connect with the calluses on your feet, we'll feel that special kind of love that comes when imperfections meet.